Hello and welcome in to another episode of Podcast 63, Season 2, Episode 13. On this week's episode, Lou is back. And Lou, are you better than ever?
I'm excited.
Okay. So I know it was a midweek podcast, but I wanted to continue the Lou and Buck shenanigans, and we're going to make sure to discuss and dissect the two games this past week, including wins at Ball State and then also win at home against Division II team Quincy. We also have some news things to talk about, and Lou wants to throw his two cents in the ring regarding the DePaul discussion. I know that's something that you're really passionate about. So make sure to stay tuned, don't turn it off, and always remember, don't forget, go Blurs. So the first thing we're going to talk about this week, which is always my favorite thing to talk about, is our new commits. Our one for sure, and then our one that has a verbal commitment, which we think is potentially something a little more behind the scenes that we don't know about. But we're talking about Baylor Hebb and Jacob Hudson. They both started their senior years, high school season. They're both playing for their respective high schools. And this past weekend, Baylor Hebb had some sort of tournament. Not entirely sure what it was, but he played, I think, 4 games over 3 days. And in those 4 games, he scored 21, 24, 27, and 44 points.
Woo-woo!
They won 3 of the 4. Kind of surprisingly, they lost the one where he scored 44. So I think it probably was just one of those cases where he's on fire and no one else is helping him out. But that's super fun to see. I hope we can see some video from that. You know, those sort of things come out a little slower and they're a little more difficult to find just because it is high school basketball. But super cool to see. I'm sure we'll see some more pretty ridiculous stat lines from him this upcoming season, and then going into AAU ball come summer. So super cool thing from him. And then also Jacob Hudson. Lou, you were saying that we actually forgot to mention something. He was seen in like a Loyola shirt or something. What was that?
Yeah,
all about?
So for those who listened last week and those who didn't, we'll just quickly recap. We were talking about how it was a little interesting. We didn't see a lot of high school seniors do a whole signing day, and Baylor did one, and a lot of past guys have done a whole signing day with a table, Loyola Ramblers tablecloth maybe, or at least every parent wearing a shirt and stuff, and a hat. But we haven't seen Jacob do one. But funny enough, I think we hit home because we know a certain close friend of his listens to the podcast.
I know his father follows the Twitter.
So we're hoping you listen as well.
I really appreciate his tweets too, because he live tweets the games, which is super fun.
That's great.
A lot of his highlights from.
Oh, that. Thank
from
you. Thank
his
you.
Father. So yeah.
But a big thing was we saw the next day or the day after, 2 days after, was he was warming up or at least doing some practice, little to the rim drills with the Loyola Ramblers T-shirt on. So we talked about how Porter and then associate head coach Matt Gordon were up there watching him, and then as we talk about just question again, as we're not questioning his commitment to Loyola, we just like. We'd love to get an actual letter signed and maybe a letter sent to us. But
specifically, yeah, you can send it to my address.
Yeah.
Gentile Arena, seat 111A.
Or the Rafters.
211A. Or the Rafters.
For Lou here.
Yes.
But it was just great to see him wearing the gear, and I think it's just great. Just a topic we're going to bring up. I just wanted to bring up. People need to remember, since we have 2 recruits, we are over scholarship. So maybe that's something maybe people want to think about since the games have, we're already at least a quarter in or a third in, and we have one over scholarship. So
and
someone,
we'll be sure to keep you guys updated with that. And when the time comes, we'll speculate about it. I mean,
we're going to speculate until the season comes to an end.
For sure.
It's
not worth it.
Interesting thing to watch.
It's not fair to the players on the team right now to speculate that. So then, moving away from recruits into alumni, we mentioned it, I did with Jeff in the last episode, the special episode, but Clayton Custer has a new role on the team. Lou, what is that role?
According to a few sources, for those who were at the game, you might not have heard it, but I'm going to actually source this from the great an amazing Rambler Mania. For those of you who don't know, Rambler Mania is a great source for content, a forum, and to talk about any level of sport, but especially your men's basketball team. But according to Rambler Mania post, The TV announcers mentioned that Clayton Custer was on the bench in a suit. So hopefully those at the game or those watching noticed, that he had indicated that he was done professional basketball and that he would actually is helping out Porter in kind of a player, director of player performance. I don't think he's properly on salary or anything. I think this is just, again, my speculation. But for those who don't know, London DeCobo, the assistant coach and also foreign player, his first year after playing for Porter at Loyola, he also was this kind of new role, and he was actually a volunteer role. He wasn't
a paid position.
As far as I know, a paid, but I know he kind of jumped in and helped. And then, as we know, he became a graduate assistant and then became, I believe it was director of video, mm-hmm. and then now assistant coach. So this is kind of, I think, a foundational point for Clayton Custer to begin maybe that path of coaching, but also maybe to get experience with the team. We've seen past alumni, I believe Joe Chrisman, he actually filled in for director of player development for a year. Don't know really the real reason behind that, but it was just a quick year. I think it was late leaving and then a late hire process. But we've seen alumni kind of interact with this team, and it's kind of cool, and especially a face like Clayton Custer. We all can't forget who he is, and it's great to see him, I think. What do you think, Buck?
Yeah, no, I'm excited about it. I think that he can't do anything but help the team at this point. I think he has cemented his legacy at Loyola as being, you know, one of the best players at Loyola, at least in the 21st century. And I think he's still got a lot to give. I mean, he hasn't been out of basketball. Like, he graduated, he went overseas to play. So he's still in, you know, athletic or in basketball shape. So at the very least, I think he gives you a guy that you can practice against or with. A lot of the coaches, assistant coaches, at least some of the younger ones, do a lot of drills and practicing and scrimmaging with the team. And so if nothing else, you get a guy that we can practice against. He's going to be someone that he can mirror or imitate another player on a team we're about to face as a sharpshooter or as a quick point guard or whatever. But I think that, you know, Lou, you have mentioned that you've wanted a point guard's coach in the past episodes that we've recorded. Do you think that Clay can fill that role, or do you think this is just temporary?
I think it's interesting. We were chatting about this a little bit before we were recording here, but I've yet to mention in my kind of complaining or my bickering about how we need a true point guard coach, London DeCobo, and I have, again, apologies if I'm not pronouncing the last name correctly, but he has learned from Brian Mullins. And again, Brian Mullins not with their team anymore, but such an impactful coach with the point guards. London learned and watched from him. Mm-hmm. And now Clayton has played for Brian and also now becoming that role of development. And he's been through the same drills. So I actually think this is an interesting thing where we have actually fresh young talent, but also a guy who's been through Porter's system and also has watched Mullins coached point guards as well. And I do think that's a huge benefit, because in the Marquise Kennedy, in the Keith Clemens, in the Jim Pipkins kind of group we have, we're a little confused of who's the leader, as we see Clemens now getting the starting role, which we'll talk about later. But again, it can also move the focus then for other coaches to focus on the big men. And I think having guys young and fresh talented, but also experienced with the right coach that we miss and truly dear miss, I think that's an interesting topic.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think it's something that honestly can only help. We're really pumped to have Clay back in the fold. It'll be exciting to see him at Gentile and traveling with the team and all that kind of stuff. So I hope nothing but the best for Clay, whether he stays with the team for, you know, 3 months or 3 years or however long. It'll be fun to have him back around. But the one thing that we focused on the last episode, Jeff and I did, was this whole DePaul shenanigans, 9-0 start, big ticket item.
I wouldn't say shenanigans. I'm just gonna, like, okay. Actually,
now they're 9-1.
Now they're 9-1. Yeah. But they were 9-0 when you were talking about it.
Yeah.
Funny enough, but yeah.
So we talked about that. We talked about why DePaul has a little bit of a bigger impact on the city when it comes to them doing well. And I know that this is a topic that you're very passionate about, especially when it comes to people overlooking some things that happened at DePaul, and just focusing on their most recent game. So we talked about it. So I'm interested in what do you make of all this DePaul news? What do
you think about it? Two things. Okay, I don't know if many people are touching it, but yes, I think I can't deny the fact that I'm a little annoyed with the hype, but it's great for City. There are two kids off the top of my head that are from Chicago, born and bred. That's Charlie Moore, and Charlie Moore left and committed to California and played basketball. He didn't like California because I think coaching changed. He actually went to Kansas, didn't like what was going on in Kansas, and he said, you know what, let me just go home. And he can end up playing for DePaul. I think he's doing pretty well there.
Yeah, he's like one. He's
their best. I know he's a starter. I don't know if he's that. And then another kid actually is their freshman who was a top 100 recruit, and that is Marquise Jacobs, who actually one of the greatest games I saw from one of our recruits, Marquise Kennedy, was playing up against Marquise Jacobs. Mm-hmm. And those are two powerhouse. Those, I believe it's Curry, and then maybe I
the high schools.
I think it's
Brother Morgan, Rice.
Marquise Kennedy's from Brother Rice.
Yeah.
Marquise Jacobs, I believe, is from Curry, C-U-R-I-E.
Oh, Curie.
Curie. Sorry, apologies. Yeah. I know people from Chicago and I hate. But okay. Charlie Moore, I believe, is from Morgan Park.
I think you're right.
So that's just huge on the fact that we can see kids from talented high schools in Chicago play in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the first fact. However, now we understand how we got there. So people are forgetting, in my opinion, certain articles that I am not really a fan of that keep being shared, is that they're not sharing the fact that DePaul's head coach committed recruiting violations. Mm-hmm. He was suspended for his games, and DePaul, if we're going to look into this, maybe tweet this out because I don't know off the top of my head, but DePaul right now is suspended from postseason, or they have some violation against him for his actions. And they also were mentioned, if people don't remember, they were mentioned in the FBI article about paying players.
Right.
So the fact that they were mentioned about paying players, and the fact that their coach has been suspended for a few games to start this season, and then the fact that their team, I believe, is held to some sanctions, shows you that they're doing something illegal. Or they're doing not something correct. So to say that they're doing it the right way, that's great. But if Loyola did that, we might be in the 9-1 conversation right now, but we don't. So that's where I don't understand is, like, what? How do you make the team for Chicago? Do you do it the way Northwestern did it, where they go to the final, they go to the NCAA tournament one year and that hype, and then all of a sudden right now they're on a slow back end, but they haven't committed anything wrong? Or do you do like Loyola and have a Cinderella story and nothing, do nothing wrong, but yet DePaul, we're praising them for having a coaching, the players are amazing, coaching staff that's kind of questionable. But again, is any coaching staff, you could have questions. If right now, if I'm talking about us, people could come back saying, you guys only recruit from Illinois Wolves. Well, we like Chicagoland kids, but maybe that's a,
there's also nothing illegal about that.
Like, no, that's there isn't. But the thing is, do I think DePaul winning for the city is great? Yes. Kids want to stay in Chicago. Not every kid can go to DePaul that he plays from school at Chicago. So that means we're not going to get second rate players. Dante Ingram didn't go anywhere big, but Loyola, he played in the Final Four. He's from Chicago. Milton Doyle, committed to Kansas, decided to come back and play for Loyola. Might not have been the first choice, but they ended up playing there and playing there for 4 years. So they end up committing. They don't just say, oh, I'm going to come here for a year and leave. There are a lot of kids who actually go JUCO who are from Chicago. There was one kid actually recently, and again, this is just talking about how important it is to have teams in Chicago win for college level. I would love you, if UIC was this, I would root for them.
Right.
I'm rooting for DePaul to do well. Do I think it's a little overhyped? Yes. Did I want them to lose to Buffalo? No. But again, it's interesting. But there's a kid named Alonzo Verge, and he was a top 10 kid that year from Chicago, but he didn't commit anywhere in Chicago. He ended up going JUCO and now plays for Arizona State.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of interesting the path Chicago kids take. But I think DePaul winning helps people realize that, yo, Chicago City's got basketball. But for people to say move over Loyola, or for people to say, hey, it's all about DePaul, I think that's a little false.
I think the city is big enough for two, if not even like three, successful basketball programs.
Yeah, I agree, and I think this is a segue to how I'm going to end this. I think the city is big enough to host a certain event that promotes Loyola basketball, and that promotes DePaul basketball, that promotes Northwestern, you're from Evanston, but we'll count you, that promotes UIC basketball, that promotes Chicago State basketball. Chicago State, for those of you who don't know, has one of the great, I believe, AAU coaches is their head coach. So he knows the roots. He knows the program. So he wants to build Chicago basketball because it's in his interest. So he's coach kids who are on DePaul, I believe, right now. Mm-hmm. He's coach kids on his AAU team. So I think he's happy to see Chicago kids play in Chicago teams play in Chicago. Like, how great is it to go play at Wintrust, probably, yeah. in Chicago, downtown, not far from where you lived, and you're going off.
Right.
Instead of going to Iowa State, instead of going away, you can come home and play.
Yeah, why go to cornfields when you can live in the skyscrapers?
Last time I checked, I know Lucas Williamson loves playing in Chicago.
Yeah.
He loves playing home. Dante loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Milton loved it. Marquise loved it. I remember Marquise Kennedy in his tweet about committing. He said, I'm staying home.
Yeah.
So I think it's amazing. But I do think people need to realize DePaul is great for the city. But the way they got there, I think people need to understand.
Right.
And I think it's tough to understand. It takes time. But to shove one team away and put only one team at top, I don't think quite now any Chicago team's at top.
No.
I think right now, record-wise, DePaul is.
Yeah.
But this is the first – now DePaul lost their first game. I'm not saying the glass zipper is gone. Mm-hmm. I don't think the clock struck 12 for them. But I don't think they're elite right now.
No.
I think they're a good basketball team,
mm-hmm.
and they got good players. But we got to remember, it's a whole season.
Yeah, just to kind of bring this full circle, just so we're square on this, the punishments from the NCAA was a 3-year probation. So they did not receive a postseason ban, but that pretty much means if they have any other infractions that they will have a postseason ban. A vacation of records in which the men's basketball student-athlete competed while ineligible. That was one of the infractions, was they had a player compete while they were ineligible. They also have recruiting restrictions, including a reduction of the 6 men's basketball recruiting person days during the academic year. And that one was actually self-imposed. And then, and an additional recruiting reduction coming up for this next year. And then they also had a $5,000 fine plus 1% of the men's basketball program budget, which means all this is I mean, it's important, but I think that it just sets them up for if they do anything else wrong, then they'll really get the hammer, the proverbial hammer.
Yeah, no, and I think just people need to understand they've done something wrong already.
Yeah.
So, and they've been mentioned in certain articles, so it's just interesting how they go about how they're doing.
Yeah. Yep, well...
this is what you get when you're under the spotlight.
Yeah, you...
Loyola got the same treatment the year after the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
When you make the news, you're going to be kind of critiqued as well.
For sure. Yeah, I think that's going to do it for the news section. We'll be sure to continue talking about Chicago basketball, and most importantly, Loyola basketball, coming up after the break. So stay tuned, and go Blurs. Yeah, no, I agree. I think there's a lot more we can see from Lucas.
Which I 100%...
There's a lot more we can see from Lucas.
Which I 100% wholly disagree with.
And we're back. So the first game of last week was an away game at Ball State, which we ended up winning 70-58. Now looking at it, you know, it's been about a week. It's definitely our most impressive win to date. If you think about any of the other teams we've played, A, they're not as good as Ball State, and B, they were all at home, except for the one neutral site game. But from any of the rankings I've looked at, Ball State is by far the best team we've won against. And it was a good game. It was a well-spread offense. We had different guys making three-point shots. We actually had, six guys make a three-pointer. 4 guys in double digits, and also a couple impressive games off the bench, namely from Jaylon Pipkins and Marquise Kennedy. But I think the real highlight from this game, other than Jaylon Pipkins' SportsCenter top 10 dunk,
woo-woo,
was our defense. Holding Ball State to 58 points, holding them to under 35% shooting, just in general, and also 36% from 3-point, which isn't horrible. Not great, but not bad. Our defense was really the key to this game, including creating 20 turnovers. They had a player actually commit 9 turnovers by himself. So I think our defense was really the key to winning this game. But, Lou, I've talked a lot about this game, so why don't you give us your keys to this game?
Yeah, I think right off the bat, it's It's just important when you spread the offense. Again, his Pickens dunk was awesome, but that was late in the second half. But a big thing I'd have to say is Keith kind of starting the role that he's pretty much probably practiced all summer to play.
Yeah.
34 minutes is tied for the most with, on the team, so I think that's an interesting thing. The man went 7 for 11 from the line. Not, again, great free throw percentage, but he's driving, I think, to the basket and getting fouled. I think that's what that's showing me. And, and he played a lot of momentum tough.
His most important free throws came at the end of the game. I think he was like 5 of 6 in the last like 5 minutes of the game or something. So he hit them when it mattered, too.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, and the important thing, quite honestly, is that we held them to 18. The only thing is like...
Right, 18 in the first half.
And 18 in the first half, but we held, we got, they scored 40 in the second half. Granted, there people could argue garbage time and all that, and I get that, but still, it's kind of a high number where we've been tendency to give high numbers. But I'm happy to see the spread. Again, it's, the big thing for me is Keith getting the 34 minutes. I think that's an interesting thing to see. Tate was 4 for 10 from field goal, not so great, but hey, we were 9 of 15 from 3. 60%, definitely probably the best we've ever had.
That'll win you games.
That will win you games, but again, is I think it's just depending on the shot selection when driving. I think that's a big thing. Tate's trying to figure out that as well, maybe how he can utilize the fake from three and then driving.
Tate needs to figure out how to finish. He gets fouled a lot, and if he can just make one or two of those a game, I think he'd see his field goal percentage go up a lot and his points per game.
Yeah, I'm definitely disappointed that Cameron Crowell goes one rebound away from a double-double, of course. But you know, Christmas is coming around soon. Well, we wish for a lot of things. But again, he was 6 for 12, so again, that's actually decently, 50%. But yeah, we'd like to see maybe those shot selection kind of, maybe if he was 6 for 10. Again, it's all... But again, against this team, this was a little bit of a redemption game. They beat us last year. This definitely was a good game. I kind of am a little indifferent with Bucks saying this was the best performance.
Who do we play better?
I think St. Joe's.
St. Joe's has had a bad season.
That's the thing is, like, do we rank Ball State the same as St. Joe's? Again, is record-wise, yeah. I think just competition-wise.
I mean, it's really early to say. I just think from an away game. That's like the biggest thing.
That's true. Okay, that's very true. An away game, we were shit against Furman who were an away game. So, again, is... That's the whole thing.
True. Furman's actually been pretty good this year.
Yeah, they
surprisingly.
Low-key news topic, Furman went to OT with Auburn. They did lose, though, but that would have helped us if they won.
They're still doing
I think the big thing is it's just we're happy to see Jalen Pipkins. We got 21 points off turnovers. That's huge. That's the first time I think we've seen. We had some bench points. That's kind
of
great.
Speaking of turnovers, one of the things I wanted to get your opinion on, so before Keith came back, one of the things we had talked a lot about was the fact that Krautwig was committing a lot of turnovers for him, 4 or 5, sometimes 6 turnovers a game.
On himself, yes.
And in this game, he only had 2. Keith Clemens also had 2. But I really do think that the return of Keith Clemens factors into that a little bit because he doesn't have to have Cam doesn't have to have the ball in his hands. He's not expected to make plays all the time. And once we get to the Quincy game, I think that point will remain true. Cam also had a low turnover game in that game, which was to be expected considering the level of the opponent. But I thought it was an impressive game for him. He also had 3 steals and a block. So
I think that's a great point to bring up, and that will kind of talk about my end of the Ball State game.
Yeah,
but Tate Hall had 5 assists.
Yeah.
Tate Hall, might not, he was tied for the most points, but he also had found a way to get 5 assists. So I think having a guy like Keith Clemens moving the ball around, but also I think that also brings in maybe when you bring in the bench guys of Jalen Pupkins and Marquise Kennedy, that can move the ball even if Tate's on that team too. You got so many guys now to helpfully move the ball. And I think that's where we're kind of weak is understanding how big of a depth we had with guys who were able to ball general kind of idea.
Yeah. But no, it was a good game. It was a fun one to listen along to. It wasn't all that close until like the last like 6 or 8 minutes.
Yeah, and that's where the 40 points in the second half comes. But
we did
it was
a good
kind
job
of garbage time, but
getting ourselves a big lead, and now
we started strong. So yeah,
we have to do a better job of keeping those big leads now.
Yep.
It was a fun game. I think for me, one of the most surprising things was Lou, you just mentioned, but Keith playing 34 minutes. Mm-hmm. I really thought that he would need time to ramp up. And if these past 2 games are any proof, he does not need that. And he was fun to watch. So.
Yeah, I think that just shows you that you've mentioned this before. Porter had a plan to use him, and I think we're seeing that now. Yeah. But my only concern is I want to keep seeing Marquise Kennedy get minutes, though he did get hurt. And he did not play the rest of the game after he got hurt.
Yeah.
But it's great to see the next man up kind of momentum. So, yeah.
Definitely.
Good game. Good win. It was much needed after it was the first game out of the tournament. Much needed win.
So. Yep. Yep. So, as we mentioned, Loyola went on the road, went to Muncie, Indiana, beat Ball State 70-58.
Redemption game.
A few days later, they had their first home game in what seemed like a while against a Division II opponent, which is not what we like to see. But what we do like to see is winning by 31 points. if I had to bet on this game, I don't know if I would have taken Loyola by, you know, that large of a margin. But it was good to see them do that to an opponent like that. They were up, I think, at one point, like 36 points, and then they kind of emptied the bench. But they did win 90-59. Lucas Williamson was the star of the game, scoring 24 of his career-high 25 points in the first half. He hit, I think in the first half, I don't think he missed a three. I think he was 7-for-7.
Yep, he was 7-for-7 from three in the first half, which I'm confused where that came from. But you know what? It's an interesting momentum he's had. But he was 7-for-7, 8-for-8 from field goal, 24 points. He was great. Again, it's like we're not, that's totally great credit. That's on him. He made the shot. Just again, is we're not fans of D2 schools.
Yeah.
We did lose to a D2 school this year. It didn't count in the record books, but it's not a good thing when you lose to a D2 school. Which maybe that should have been the start to how the season might have been going. But
yeah,
it's happy to see this win. This counts actually toward our win total.
It does,
which is very interesting to me.
Yeah.
Kind of a little asterisk maybe there, but I respect the team that they win, but I wish we were playing a Bowling Green, or I wish we were playing
Chicago State,
Green Bay, or what happened? Where's the UIC game? We're missing the UIC game, guys.
This would have been such a good spot for the UIC game. Great coming spot. Home, either to play at UIC or at home.
Yeah, quite honestly, last time we played at UIC, Dante had a game winner, and that was the same year as the Final Four, so.
There you go.
You know what? Yeah, but right now, Quincy, yeah, they, quite honestly, I think the thing that we interest in is that we let them score 34 points in the second half. Granted, it's a lot of garbage time. But
it was a lot of chuck-up shots.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Great to see, though. I think Cameron's getting 9-for-11. I think these are games where you practice.
Yeah.
And again, as you look at the guys, not one guy, only Lucas played 23 minutes. The last game, the average was around 30 minutes a game.
Yeah, they had four
Everyone
guys.
Played less game, and that meant a lot of guys came in. Tom Welch played 17 minutes. Mm-hmm. Marquise Kennedy played 18. He dropped 11. He was 5-for-8. So that was a lot of seeing things. Keith Clemens had four turnovers, which kind of intrigued me. Again, he might have been trying stuff.
There
again,
were two specifically that weren't his fault. Yeah. I remember thinking to myself.
And I think that's where these are the games you practice and you try to see, I'm going to force this one this game. Mm. We're up by 20 maybe. Again, we don't know that's how they think. But it's just interesting how the momentum goes with a team, especially a D2 team.
Yeah.
So that's the situation.
Did only have three guys in double digits. So, like we mentioned, Lucas had 25. Cam had 18, 8 rebounds, only 1 assist, which is, I think, a season low for him.
Just needed 2 more rebounds, though, for a double-double.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
And then Marquise finished with 11 and 3 assists and 3 steals and 2 dunks, which are always fun to see.
Always fun.
He can get up so quick.
He can. Well,
from
2
feet,
speed,
too.
He, that's so true. Like, he's so close to the rim, you're like, there's no way. And he just
and
goes.
And so he just, elevates. It's great. Both of his dunks are like that. They're both, fast break-ish, where he got
a steal.
Finally
gathers the ball, and then it's like, oh, I'm just going to jump now.
He just had so much time. He jumps off 2 feet. And,
so,
and
don't get hurt, though.
No. I think that I like the two-footed off 2 feet because you're less likely to get hurt.
You're not jumping from far away.
No. Keith had a really nice steal and fast break layup that I like to see. Hopefully we see more of that from him. He's a pass on defense.
Aheer had 6 assists.
Yeah.
That was another great thing, I think, to see other guys doing things that are really not their kind of game.
It's not like
script.
His forte, but...
Yeah, no. Yeah, forte I think is great because it's not what they normally do, but it's great to see them do other things.
I think that comes from Lucas making 7 threes. I'd be surprised. I'd be interested to see how many of those were assisted by Uguac.
Yeah, you know what? We'll tweet that out.
I would imagine it's got to be at least 4. I don't know. I mean, we had Aheer had 6 points, 7 rebounds, and 6 assists. A pretty good overall stat line for him. But that's also what I would expect to see. He was by far the most athletic player on that court every time he came on the court.
Quite honestly, I think people need to understand this. I think Aheer is the most athletic guy on our team.
Oh, yeah.
But we need to hear him We need to see him play more. And yeah, I guess more to the rim. No, none of this. We need to stop with the whole him just, let's be honest, trying to shoot.
Yeah.
And just drive to the rim. You're really athletic. And this is the games where you see even when you drive, you might be able to push it out to a guy who can shoot a three.
Yeah. Tate had 8 points after, I think he went scoreless in the first half, but did have 8 in the second half. A little quiet night from him, but you know what? I'm not too worried about it. Keith had 7. Tom had 3. Frank had 2. Bruno had 4. Pipkins had 1. And Paxson had 5 points. Pax did hit a 3, which was nice to see. Kind of interesting to see Pipkins only playing 8 minutes after playing 19 in a very important game, but I think that was more just like, I think did he get into foul trouble? No, he didn't have any fouls. I forget what he did, but he did something wrong, got taken out of the game, and by the time he was ready to come back in the game, I think it was, we were up 30, so coach probably didn't want to put him back in.
Yeah, no, I'll just let you know, all 3 of Marquise Kennedy's assists came from a Lucas Williamson 3.
Oh, so he was the one that
benefited. He was the one, because here actually, through one of his, out of one of his 6, only 1 was a 3-pointer from Lucas.
Weird. Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of Keith Clemens had a few to Lucas. Yeah. So just interesting kind of see. Or sorry, Keith Clemens only had 1 assist. But again, my only thing is just going to quickly say, no, I don't like seeing 4 turnovers. But again, as Clemens is getting that role, it's against D2 school. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Clean up, you did a little bit. Again, that's where I get scared with Furman games. Again, as coaching staff, let's not play D2 schools. Granted, we lost them, so maybe they're good competition in the preseason, but I'd like to see a Green Bay. This is where we need, and not saying it's going to happen next year, but if we don't have a good tournament, Thanksgiving tournament, we need games, quality games that are we're going to win.
And this is such an easy game to get rid of and make your schedule so much better. Like, exactly. You just get rid of this and play literally any other Division I school, and your schedule's immediately a ton better. But, I mean, you know what? We did what we should have done to a Division II school, won by 31 points, created a bunch of turnovers, 18 turnovers. Really only one guy was beating us all game, which he was chucking up tons of shots. So not too worried about that. But, no, I think it was a fun game to go to. Got to see a lot of action, a lot of dunks, a lot of steals. And one of Lucas Williamson's best games as a college athlete. So, after this game, the Loyola has a little bit of a break. We don't play again until Sunday. They're off for finals. And on Sunday, we play Norfolk State, who is a member of the same conference as Coppin State.
Ooh.
Which we all know what happened earlier this season.
We don't have to talk about it.
Yeah, no, we don't. But Norfolk State has yet to beat a Division I team. They're 3-8, I think, or 3-7, 3-8, and they, all 3 of their wins have come against Division II schools. So this hopefully looks a lot like the Quincy game. Hopefully we're able to kind of get up early. Maybe someone gets hot. Maybe we see Tate get hot or Keith make a couple threes. And hopefully they just run away with this one. But, you know, it is a Division I school. Anything could happen. Norfolk State, if I remember, we've played them like 3 years in a row or something like that. They always have a very athletic team, very tall. So hopefully we can just kind of outclass them and just have our fundamentals be better. After the Norfolk State game, we actually only have 2 more non-conference games. We have a neutral site game against Vanderbilt on the 18th. And then our non-conference finale is at home on the 22nd against Davidson. So, I mean, we're getting down to it. We're getting down to seeing, I think, especially by the Davidson and Vanderbilt games, I think those 2 games are really going to understand what our rotations look like, who's playing the bulk of the minutes, who's the first guy off the bench, who's, you know, how deep are we going into the bench?
Who's playing last 4 minutes, who can make a field goal in the last 10 minutes? Those are the questions that we're gonna hopefully have answers to, or at least have an idea of who's gonna be taking those shots.
Hopefully, someone.
Someone. Anyone.
Yeah, but I am kind of interested to see how deep the bench goes. You know, we do have guys like Tom Welch and Bruno and Pipkins to some extent who aren't seeing a ton of minutes in some games, and then seeing a decent amount in others. So I think that's kind of my biggest storyline to look forward to the end of the season. Because although I want to win those games, let's be honest, it's going to come down to the conference schedule, to the conference record. Although it's been very up and down so far this season, I think if you win these three games, I don't know how you don't feel good about going into the conference schedule on a 6-game winning streak with our team over 500 at, 9-4? I mean, if you would have told me that at the beginning of the season, I would have been okay with it. Lou, how did you feel about this little win streak we put together, 3 games in a row?
They're interesting, again, as it's toward the end of the kind of Thanksgiving tournament, and it wasn't what I expected. I expected at least maybe a 4-game. Mm-hmm. But again, as it's needed. It's much needed. I think this hopefully leads into a win on Sunday.
Yeah.
And then that's the more important thing, is if we can move this momentum to the next 2 games after Sunday, which are going to be tough competition. I know Vanderbilt's coming off, a new coach, young team,
mm-hmm.
kind of interesting setup.
6-2 at the moment.
6-2. Don't know who they've beaten right now.
Yeah, looks like they beat Buffalo recently.
Okay, Buffalo just beat DePaul, so again, is that always, we don't know. But again, then we have Davidson, so it's like Davidson's mix of top 25 talent, so
mm-hmm.
that's where it's like, hey, we need to, like, those games are as important as any game.
For sure.
And again, I think it's going to really come down to our conference play, but having those 2 games of maybe W's, they're both away if I'm, or no, but Davidson's, no,
Davidson's
home,
at home,
but
and Vanderbilt's
neutral,
like neutral
site, yeah.
But
again, is there as important a win regardless of the location?
For sure. Yeah, I think it'll tell us a lot about our team going into conference time.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think, Lou, do you have any lasting thoughts?
Clayton Custer, help us with point guards.
Clayton Custer's back. If it looks like sometimes we need him on the court. At least junior year Clayton Custer.
Whoa.
Ooh, sorry. But yeah, I guess we're going to go out on that little bit of shade. We're not.
Well, I think that's just like, this team is not the team I went to the Final Four. People need to know that. We're talking the real talk. But it's great to see them win.
Yeah.
I think it's great. And again, it's new guys to root for. We're happy to see alumni come back, and I think that's the culture we've set at Loyola. You saw Dante and Milton play in the G League. It's great to see our guys still be the guys we rooted for and we can still root for. And maybe Clayton ends up becoming an assistant coach. We'd love to see that.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting thing, and we just love this team. So, yeah.
Winning is more fun than losing.
That's a good idea. I like that. We should put that on a shirt.
I'll put it on a pillow.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's going to do it here for Buck and Lou at Podcast 63. Thank you all for listening. And don't forget, go Blurs.